Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by HelloFresh.com. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Campfire30. That's Campfire30. So make sure you go over to HelloFresh.com. Use that offer code Campfire30. Thanks, HelloFresh. Also, Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free, just cover shipping. So, to get your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, and shave gel, go to harrys.com/campfire right now. That's harrys.com/campfire. Thanks, Harry's.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again in exciting times here at the Spooky Studio. We're working on a new app. I don't know if I've mentioned that on the Campfire, an app where you can go and listen to all of our shows, whether they're the free ones or if you're a Plus member, you can log in and listen to all those. And why not make it an easier experience? I know we have an app now, but it has some room for improvement. And we're certainly looking in a total revamp. We're going to call it something different so it's very clear. And I think you're going to like it. I'm really excited about it. Just got word today that the app should be available for at least for me to preview and start working with in the first half of May. So it's going to take a little more time than that. But this summer, we should have a great new app for you, whether you're a free listener or if you say, hey, I want to take the plunge on the Plus Club. So it should be very cool. So stay tuned for that. And otherwise, we just keep making podcasts and we just keep having great campfire callers like these. Samantha is on the line from Wisconsin. She's a Plus Club member and we thank her so much for that. And she has a couple of things that she wants to talk to us. About a legend that she came face to face with. And turned out that it was real. And then, going to tell us about her childhood home. Samantha, welcome to the program. Thanks for your support as a Plus member. And tell us these stories.
Thanks for having me, Jim. So I think I'll start off with the church. In high school, really small town. I think my graduating class had maybe 90 people in it. So there wasn't a ton to do. So me and my best friend had kind of gotten into the paranormal just from, you know, spending time at my childhood home, which I'll get into later. So we had gotten a book called Haunted Wisconsin, and in it, kind of looking online too, there was this church that was actually, you know, maybe half an hour from my town. So the legend goes, a woman had gotten distraught and over losing a baby and hung herself in the bell tower of this church. So the legend goes, you know, if you ring the bell, she is supposed to, you know, her body is supposed to appear.
Right.
So, you know, that in itself is just horrific. Well, to top it off, the original church had burned down in, I believe, the 50s, and some people had gotten trapped in there and lost their lives. Well, they rebuilt the church on the exact same plot. So, you take this. It's kind of like, we call it a Wisconsin highway. You know, it's a highway, but it's not a freeway. So, we go and we're pulling up and her car starts kind of making a funny noise. So we didn't really think anything of it. And the first time we went there, it was during the day. So we just kind of checked out the grounds and, there's a real ominous feeling just from, you know, knowing the legend and knowing the history of the land. So we walk, there's a, this church is in the middle of the country. So You know, there's nothing around. It's on a paved road, but all the other streets are all gravel. So we're walking around the cemetery, and there's headstones, you know, from the mid-1800s and on. So just a lot of history there, which I'm a big fan of. And so there's this little shed, and, you know, nobody's around, and we probably should have done this, but we're just like, oh, you know, we kind of peeked in the shed and, you know, not doing any harm to anything. But there was the, you know, where they would put the hymnals for the day and everything like that. The original chalkboard that was from the original church, you know, and you could see that it had been rescued from the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really spooky. So, you know, we kind of left and couldn't get it out of our heads. So the next night we go there and, you know, it's probably 10:30 at night. And, you know, we take this really long gravel road. We went the back way and, you know, there's nothing around. And on the top of this light pole, you know, there's just one light. And so it's just a really spooky, you know, eyes on you feeling. So, you know, we're like, how are we going to ring this bell? So, one of my friends, Ashley, she's one of those people that just are good at everything. And she rung the bell on her first try. So, if you can imagine, three teenage girls, it's pitch dark, we're in the middle of nowhere, we're on this land that has all this history and, you know, tales. And all of a sudden we just, you know, the bell rings and it, Jim, it just like the sound goes through your soul.
Ooh.
So so we run in the car, you know, and our attention is on the cemetery next door because we kind of could see, you know, bouncing orbs almost. And I'm like, you know, what is that? Did we make one of the farmers mad and, you know, he's coming to tell us to just leave it alone, you know? So we're focused over there. And I'm in the front passenger seat and my friend Amanda's in the driver's seat and our girlfriend Ashley is in the back. And I look over, Jim, and my attention goes up to the bell tower. And I'm getting goosebumps. I see this girl standing in the bell tower, you know, from the waist up, you know, there's a little ledge and I can see her looking down at us with the most hateful look that I have ever seen. And she had long hair and period clothing, you know, it was just so, so I gasp and I look forward and, Amanda, you know, leans over me to look and she floors it. So we're going quite fast down the road and her car starts to not shift. You know, she had a stick shift, never had an automatic, so she was a pro at the stick shift, but her car started to not go into gear. So, you know, we get to the first stop sign and she stops and I said, Amanda, tell me what you saw. And she just starts crying. She explain the same thing that I saw, Jim. And, you know, it was so crazy. It was really wild.
Well, the thing is, you read about something and mm-hmm. maybe you expected something mysterious, but I bet you didn't expect exactly that thing happening that vividly, right?
No, not at all. You know, and all the kids in the area, well, you know, back before everybody had smartphones and tablets, you know, that kids have these days, you know, there really wasn't a lot to do. So I do think we were really hoping to go and, you know, encounter something. And I didn't expect that we would, you know, but the fact that we both saw, you know, the same apparition, you know, it was really, really strange. So and we've had a lot of reports, and talked to a lot of, our peers and things like that have gone down that road. And there's actually a lot of recorded car accidents that happen on that road. you know, which is a little bit strange because it's a flat, you know, stretch of road, and you can see for miles down the road because there's nothing really around. So,
Well, and I know you have another story for us, and this one is a little closer to home, literally. Tell us about your childhood home.
Okay, so I grew up right by the Apple River, and so when the town was first starting to get, you know, built and things like that, there were loggers that they would build these cabins, and mine was right across the street from the river. They had a line of homes across the river, and our house was, you know, added on to the, you know, you can kind of tell where the main foundation was. So I had moved in there when I was about 12. And so we would just have, you know, really strange things happen. We had gone on a vacation, and I think we went camping, and our pets were with, our dogs. So, you know, we had gotten home, and my mother goes into her room to put her stuff away, and she calls me up into her bedroom, and she's, I'm like, yeah. And she's looking at the bed, and there's this huge soaking wet circle in the middle of her bed. And so, you know, she's like, hops on her bed and is searching for a leak. And, you know, we just could not find any source of water, you know, to have soaking wet, perfect circle on her mattress. So that was kind of the first thing that we couldn't really explain. My brother, they had switched rooms, and my brother was sleeping one night, and you know, he's not one to really get frightened that easily, but he said he fell asleep on top of the covers, and he felt something grab both of his feet, like really just like grab, and he thought somebody broke in. So he jumped up and threw the remote at the, you know, across the room, and you know, there's nobody there. So it just really freaked him out. So he said, you know, he spent the night with his lights on the rest of the night. What else? You know, we had the computer in our living room area, and my mom had this gorgeous antique mirror above the computer. And, you know, I'm doing homework or whatever, and I just kind of stand up, and I just glance out of the corner of my eye. I see a silhouette, you know, behind me, but in the next room. And so I kind of like double take, because, you know, nobody was home, of course. And I see this old gentleman. I mean, it's not like he was, you know, dressed like a lumberjack or something from, you know, the time, but just an old man. And I remember he looked very solemn, you know, very sad and quite lonely. So, you know, I kind of looked at him for, I don't know, maybe 5 seconds. And, you know, I just kind of blinked and, you know, rubbed my eyes, and he wasn't there anymore, but I know I saw that old man, in the room. So, later on, you know, I had met my husband and, gotten pregnant. And, during my pregnancy was the time that I had experienced the most, activity, which is a little disconcerting. So we're laying in bed, and I'm probably like 4 months along, you know, just starting to really show. And we're laying in bed, and we had these tall matching dressers on either side of the bed. Well, we kind of woke up face to face, which was bizarre in itself. And so we wake up, and we're just kind of like groggy, and we just kind of both look at each other at the same time. And all of a sudden, from my side of the bed, this water bottle, Jim, I'm not kidding, goes flying across the room. I mean, flying, smacks into the wall, and then just falls. And so we jump up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, how did that happen? You know, things don't go flying across the room like that, you know? So,
no,
later, no, like that's not supposed to happen. So, a couple of nights later, we had a water pipe had burst in our apartment. So we were staying at, my father-in-law's house, and we had fallen asleep on the couch. And it, you know, the TV had gone to sleep mode or whatever. So, you know, we're just sleeping, and I don't remember what time it was, but it was, you know, a weird time, like 1:34 or something in the morning. And we hear this really creepy, almost like really what you would see in like in a scary movie, the weird woman with the weird singing, almost like a gospel music, coming from their bedroom. I'm like, you know, Ryan, what is that? So he gets up and he goes and looks, and it's his stepmom's alarm clock going off, blaring this music. So, you know, we had told her about it the next day when they had gotten home from their cabin, and we're like, you know, I don't know why it would be such an odd hour. And she's like, that is so weird because my alarm clock is set to play country music. So it just, it did not add up to, you know, it, things like that didn't really add up.
So. Now, let me ask you this. Now, you told me that you listen to the show every night when you work with ghost stories. Now, a lot of people, if they kind of grew up or in a house that was, sounds like it may have been very well haunted, would want to stay away from it. Why do you think you're fascinated by these stories?
You know, that's a really good question. I think I'm very curious about what happens after we pass on. You know, I don't think I'm psychic, but both of my pregnancies, I knew I was pregnant the day I woke up. The once I had a dream, and the other time, I had just went and bought a pregnancy test, and, you know, it's just really strange to me, you know, even my deja vu encounters. You know, I'm in an abnormal psychology class right now, and we kind of go over, you know, hauntings a little bit and how can that be tied into dreams and paranormal things like that. So I just so interested, and I want to know more. You know, it's just, it fascinates me. I think like all of your listeners and all of the stories that they have, it's kind of a curiosity, you know?
Yeah. So, I've been doing these shows now for 12 years and mm-hmm. I am just as curious as I've ever been. I don't know if I have any answers, but I know at least there's a lot more people than just me interested in this. And I'm so glad to connect with people like you, Samantha. Thank you so much for being on the Campfire tonight.
Thank you so much, Jim. I had a blast. Take care.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by HelloFresh.com. And we're so glad that they're back because they are a fine company. Delicious meals, convenience, freshness, very, very good. Now, if you're not familiar, HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Now, each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. And each one is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. The recipes are set up so that anyone, even me, can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in about 30 minutes, whether you usually cook for yourself or you're not so comfortable making home-cooked meals. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. Best of all, everything is delivered to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box, so no running out to the store or any of that business. Now, HelloFresh is about continuous improvement. They're always getting better and better and better. And now they're offering light spring meals, and they've just introduced breakfast options, less than $10 a meal. Economical too. Now, I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they have a great new offer. And it is $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CAMPFIRE30. That's CAMPFIRE, the number 3 and the number 0. Now, let me tell you a personal experience I had yesterday. We got our HelloFresh shipment and was looking forward to it. And my high school daughter said, I want to take a shot. I want to cook dinner. So my wife and I coincidentally last night had an engagement that was going to take about an hour. So we left. And when we came back, my high school daughter had prepared a delectable meal. Actually, it was the chicken gone nuts, and it has a walnut crust, glazed carrots, and roasted broccoli. Delicious. So I've got to tell you, I'm a big fan of HelloFresh. I think you will be too if you give it a try. So please go over to HelloFresh.com and use the code CAMPFIRE30 to get $30 off your first week of delivery. That's again, HelloFresh.com. Use that code CAMPFIRE30, the number 3 and the number 0, to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, HelloFresh. Next up on the campfire is Shane. He is from my neck of the woods in northeastern Ohio. We're so glad to have him on. And he has a story about, well, he went paranormal investigating when he was in college and maybe got more than he really bargained for, including some EVP we're going to share. Shane, welcome to the program today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jim. My pleasure to be on.
So tell us about these paranormal adventures you guys were having leading up to the EVP session.
Yeah, of course. So basically, I was in college at the time that Ghost Hunters and all the other paranormal shows really started emerging and becoming popular.
Sure.
And my roommate Jake and I were rather obsessed with them. So, of course, we thought, what better idea than to start our own little paranormal group on campus? So we, recruited a couple of our friends, and for a couple of semesters, we made a weekly habit of going to, this cemetery that was, pretty close to campus. Mm-hmm. We had gotten as comfortable as you could be going to a cemetery in
sure.
the middle of the night. But, this one particular evening, felt a little more, uncomfortable, I guess is the word, than any other night we had been there. This was probably late fall, and we get to the cemetery, and right from the moment we walked in, about four or five of us were there, just felt really anxious, uncomfortable, and like we shouldn't be there, like we were being watched. And I remember some people saying, feeling like we were surrounded. So we kind of just huddled together, didn't really explore around a lot like we usually did. And like I said, it was fall, so there were leaves on the ground. And there were even times when we felt like we could hear footsteps all around us in the leaves and coming closer to us and then kind of scurrying back. So we kind of made the group decision that we should kind of hit the bricks and head back to campus a little faster than normal. And we were on our way out at a brisk pace. We were kind of in a hurry to leave. And a friend of ours who was with us, who always seemed to be a little more sensitive to everything that was going on than the rest of us, on our way out, we were almost to the exit of the cemetery. And out of nowhere, she throws up her arms and she says, "Wait, everybody stop." So we all kind of stop and look at her and then look around at each other. And nothing else happens. And, you know, she's like, you know, okay, never mind, let's go. So we hurry back to campus and, the whole walk back, which, you know, wasn't too far, but everybody was talking about how strange it felt, how uncomfortable everybody was. And, we had made a habit of, as soon as we got back to campus, we would immediately, you know, look at our pictures from our cameras, listen to the audio. We were, you know, always anxious to see what or if we caught anything.
Makes sense.
So I loaded up the audio. We always had a couple recorders running, and we ended up with a couple of great EVPs that kind of corroborated what we were feeling and what was going on in the cemetery with us.
Well, I know that you've sent along those clips. So what we're going to do is we're going to play them. But first of all, I'm going to play the first one. And then, so we don't color anybody's judgment. We're going to play it twice. And then you're going to come back on and tell us what you think that you heard. And here it is two times. Well, that was certainly spooky. What did we hear, Shane?
All right. So that one happened when we were all kind of just standing around, really feeling uncomfortable. And what we all feel like we hear is you can hear one of us kind of mumbling in the background. But then on top of that, we hear a voice whispering, "Get out right now."
Ooh, spooky, spooky. I'll play it back. Yeah. I'll play back one more time so people can judge for themselves. Here it is. And I know we have another one. And this one will play. This one will play twice, and then we'll do the same thing. You can come back and tell us what you think we heard. Here it is.
Okay.
I felt that. No, wait, stop. I felt that. No, wait, stop.
And Shane, what did you hear on that one?
Well, that one coincides with our friend stopping us on the way out of the cemetery and what we believe we hear about two to three seconds before our friend stops us is hear a voice whispering, "Stop her," which kind of blew our minds when we discovered it.
And that's spooky. So here's the $64,000 question. Did you guys ever go back?
Yeah, we did go back, actually. That was getting close to the end of our collegiate career, so we were only about a month away from graduating, but I think we did make it back two or three times after that.
Very good. And I mean, has this actually continued for you? I mean, have you looked further into paranormal investigation or do you just listen to podcasts about it?
These days, mostly just listen to podcasts. We do, you know, kick around the idea every now and then of, you know, going out for fun. And even a time or two after we graduated, we did make a trip back to that cemetery just to ghost hunt a little bit. But it's definitely slowed down since our college days.
Well, I've got a little dénouement to add to the story for everyone. By the way, we recorded Shane yesterday, but we had an equipment failure that we've not had in almost 12 years of doing podcasts. Was it some maniacal spirit or just a coincidence? You be the judge. But Shane, I think we got through this one okay. And thank you for joining us today on the Campfire.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I should mention that we will have yet another Shane later in the show, just so you know. It's a different person with quite a different accent, but just wanted to mention it. Back to the next call. Next up on the Campfire is William. He's a fairly new listener, and this sounds like a great story. I guess kind of a boat trip or a fishing trip that some strange things happen. So we're going to talk to William about it. William, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be here.
Tell us what happened.
Yeah, when I was a teen, I'm 55 right now, so it's been, you know, quite a few years. But I was a, you know, mid to late teen, so we're going to 16 years old, maybe somewhere around there. We grew up in Tampa, Florida, and we didn't have a whole lot of money. We were, you know, probably poor by most standards. But my dad loved boats, and somehow or another, he always had a boat, but it was... And it wasn't small boats. They were, you know, 20, 30 foot cabin cruiser boats, but they were basically derelicts. You know, they were, you know, some of them were trying to sink. They didn't run. I was 16. You don't pay that much attention. I don't know where he got them, but he got them either cheap or for free, abandoned, whatever. And these boats, because of not having much money, were also kept at marinas that were either abandoned or almost condemned, you know. And so it was like this ritual on the weekends, on Saturdays, that myself and a few of my friends that grew up on the same street as I did would go with my dad. We'd pile in the back of his pickup truck, and he would drive us down this marina. And while he's working on his boat, we would go fishing and exploring and generally goofing around this old marina. Mm-hmm. And on the property was a restaurant, or what had been a restaurant. There was all kinds of buildings on the property. And like I said, that I don't know if the marina was closed or whatever, but there weren't very many boats. There were no other people there. And all the buildings were boarded up and closed and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we found this restaurant that was boarded up.
Right.
And we, you know, we're three teenage guys, and we found a way in. You know, we found our way in through some back screen door of this abandoned restaurant. So we're making our way in, and it's dark. There's broken glass everywhere. There's tables. You know, this restaurant had been closed up in a fair hurry because there were still sort of salt and pepper shakers on the tables and stuff like that. So we're creeping through this restaurant. And again, it's dark. You know, we can see because the windows are boarded up, but there is some light coming in. And we weren't prepared for this, so we had no flashlights or anything. So we're creeping around, and we creep around behind the counter because it's a cafe-type restaurant. And we made our way back into the kitchen. And it's dark. We can't see too much, but there's an area of like these, the best I can describe were like freezer lockers.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't. It wasn't like a freezer door that was big and went all the way to the floor. There was a couple or a few of these things. There were doors that were maybe a few feet along each side, and they were up off the ground in this stainless steel or metal wall. And they were big, thick doors with big latches, like a refrigerated or freezer kind of thing. One of these was open, and hanging out of it was something that was just very disturbing. Now, there's no question that we had gotten ourselves all worked up because we're three guys. We're creeping through this restaurant. It's dark. We're expecting to see something spooky at any moment.
Right.
And this thing fit the bill. It was roughly human sized. But other than being roughly the size of a human, it had no human characteristics. It was very sort of just round and blunt. In the dark, it appeared to be sort of a red, meaty color, and it had a white band, possibly a bandage or gauze wrapped around it. Now, this is all, you know, what you could take in the split second that we saw it, because we immediately, you know, it became like a Three Stooges, Flintstones running into each other, skittering on the glass, just trying to get out. The sight of this thing so triggered our response that we all bolted and we got out of the restaurant, and our hearts were racing and we were panting. And what was that? I don't know. It just freaked us out for whatever reason. So, you know, we went home, and like I said, this marina thing was a ritual pretty much every weekend. So the following Saturday, same thing, down to the marina. And of course, this had been a topic all week long, and we decided we're going to go back and see what this thing was. We just had to go see what the heck it was that scared us so badly. So this time we had some flashlights, go back in the restaurant, make our way back in there, walk through the kitchen door, and there are all the vaults. But this thing is gone. All the doors are closed. There's no sign of this thing. Now, Three of us saw it. And this, you know, again, I have to drive home. This restaurant, this marina, there was zero activity. Zero. The odds of someone, you know, going in this restaurant, maintenance-wise, for any reason, is zero. So what this thing was, why it scared us so badly, or where it went is just, I have no idea. I have no idea to this day what we saw or where it went. And it's just one of the creepiest things I've ever experienced.
I guess it would be. I mean, that's just kind of strange. And kind of the setting makes it very strange, too. You know, this old abandoned restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. And there, like I said, there's no question that caused a lot of the spookiness here, because it was that type of thing. It was your stereotypical just creepy scenario. And so much of this stuff, you guys have talked about it before, it's an obvious point, is that some of this stuff can be coincidence. Clearly, someone, this could have been anything, I guess, I don't know, but someone surely could have gone in there and removed it and closed the door. But the timing was insane. This restaurant had been boarded up. Nobody had been in this place for probably years. And
right.
So the idea that someone would have gone in and moved this thing in the 1 week between the time we stumbled across it and came back is just really, really, it's almost as if it's a coincidence, that's just as bizarre as anything else.
Yeah, that is weird. And it's just kind of one of those stories that just kind of makes you go,
yeah, it is. And let me just tell you one more quick one that's also
sure.
related to my dad. And it's the kind of thing that's come up on your show before, but, just really quick, he passed away and I was pretty young. My mom and dad both passed away and I was probably at this time, I might be 20 or something like that. So they passed away and I find myself living in the house where we grew up that they owned and we grew up and I'm the only one living there. And it would get a little creepy at times because, you know, whatever, everything. And, I'll never forget one evening I'm laying in bed. Now my dad had been dead for probably a year, maybe roughly. And I'm laying in bed, I'm reading, cause I would read before I go to bed. And it's one of those times that I was in that zone, right? As I'm sort of drifting off and I'm reading this book and my dad went, "Hey," just as clear as day.
Huh.
It was his voice. I can even tell you where in the room it was coming from. You know, I mean, there was a three-dimensional orientation to it. It wasn't this weird, ethereal, floating voice. It was my dad, and he was standing right in this corner. And, you know, I've always kind of attributed it to the fact that I was half asleep and, you know, some kind of dream
right.
kind of thing or whatever. I don't know. But it was so absolutely real. It was, and what a weird thing to drink. I mean, what? It had nothing to do with anything. Why would I, of all the things that you could dream or imagine, why, you know,
right.
him just standing in the room going, "Hey," but anyway, that was just another really just real creepy thing that I experienced at one time.
I believe these things happen, William. I believe they happen. And thank you for joining us today on the Campfire and sharing your story.
No problem. Thanks for calling me.
Shane is on the line all the way from Australia. When I talk to somebody from Australia, I'm always, my mind is bent by the time difference. I'm talking to Shane on a Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. It is 12 noon, midday in Australia where he's at. So glad to have him with us. He's going to tell us about a situation with the passing of a friend. Shane, thank you for joining us and tell us what happened.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for considering my story for the show. Back in 1990, I was working in Sydney as a security officer in a high-rise building doing the night shift. Part of our duty was to go around and turn all the lights off in the building manually. So we had to go to every floor and turn a switch off and then move to the next floor, turn the switches off, etc. So I did that about 7 o'clock. And around about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, it was getting a bit drowsy, so I thought I'd walk outside and get some fresh air. When I walked up into the forecourt of the building, it sort of felt weird, and I had a look behind me, and every light in the building had turned on.
Mm.
So I thought that very unusual.
Sure.
It was sort of wasn't even programmed, and the fact we turned the switches off manually meant you actually had to physically override the switch to get it on. So went through the building again, turned them all off, got home that morning, and a bit later through the day rang my mother, and she said, "Oh, I've got some really bad news. A family friend has passed from a heart attack." I thought, you know, really, really sad and didn't think any more of it. Then later that day, I thought, hang on, he was an electrician. And I thought, how would an electrician say goodbye other than to turn the lights on?
Good point.
And then just as a follow-up to that, yesterday was actually the anniversary and I didn't realize it until I read it on Facebook and thought, oh, really, really sad. It's been that long since this man went, you know, just a little bit of a thought. And then later on, I was on Facebook again, and my cousin, who this man was even closer to, said that it's really weird. Her iPod kept turning on to a Beatles tune and was playing every time she tried to turn it off, she'd leave it for a couple of minutes and it would just repeatedly go back to this tune. And the friend that passed away was actually a Beatles fan.
Oh, wow.
So it was just, yeah, just a really weird follow-up to a strange story. And when he passed, my cousin, he actually gave my other cousin a electric clock that hadn't worked in years, battery-operated clock. And the day after he passed away, that clock started working again as well.
I've heard of things like that. I've definitely heard of things like that. Now, I know you have some other stories. Usually we kind of limit to one or two, but you are calling all the way from Australia. So what's your next story for us?
Just after my father passed away, I moved back in with my mum to give her a companionship and just help her out. She had a pet cat at the time that used to live in the house and would get up on the bed. But at night, she'd sort of close off her section of the house so the cat couldn't get around.
Mm-hmm.
I was laying in bed a few nights and I felt this cat jump up on the bed. But when I've got to pat the cat, there was nothing there.
Huh.
And I thought, that's really weird. It must have got off. Then after about 4 or 5 weeks of living with her, she came up to me. She goes, look, you're going to think I'm crazy, but have you felt anything jump on your bed?
Right.
And I've gone, well, yeah, I felt a cat, but I thought it was, you know, your cat. She's gone, no. She said, the cat's been on the bed, and I felt another cat jump up as well. And I thought, oh, okay, very strange. And this kept happening over a period of weeks, and it was just sort of mum and myself that were feeling it. Then we had some friends of mine down, and he absolutely hated cats, wanted nothing to do with cats, so we put him in a part of the house where the cat could definitely not get into. And then the next morning, he's said, oh, that damn cat was all up on my bed last night. Every time I shoo it off, it wasn't there. And we sort of went, well, no, that's impossible. There's not a chance that cat could have got through that part of the house. And so we put it down to this ghost cat, for want of a better word. And then my auntie and cousin came out from England to visit, and they were staying in the same room that my friend stayed in. And they were complaining about this cat that every night would go in, jump up on their bed, knead the bed with its paws, and just continually all night long, that's all they got. And yet there is no way that our cat could have got in there. And this went on for about 12 months and then just stopped absolutely suddenly. And the thing is, my father was a cat person. He had several cats through his life and absolutely loved cats.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it was him coming back in that form to... And we're just not sure.
And since you're online all the way from Australia, give us one last story, if you would.
Okay. I'll give you a quick one. This one goes back to when we were kids growing up in a small country town in New South Wales. One night we were just sitting on the veranda of our house, and it was about 4 or 5 of us. It was about 10 o'clock at night, and as I say, we're only 15, so there was no alcohol involved. And one of my friends just turned around and said, wouldn't it be really weird if a hearse drove by now? And we just said, oh, you're an idiot, you know, get over yourself. And then about 5 minutes later, we're sitting there and we saw these headlights. And it was, as I say, a quiet town. Nothing moved after 9 o'clock. We saw these headlights and this old 1940-style hearse drove by us along the road. So we went inside after that and locked the door and pulled the curtains.
Well, there you have it. Well, Shane, I got to tell you, I enjoyed speaking with you. I thank you so much for joining us tonight on The Campfire, all the way from Australia.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Now, Harry's is a better way to shave. I can tell you from my own experience, the convenience of having your razors come to your home. You don't have to deal with the outrageous prices or inconvenience of stores. And best of all, the shave itself is great. It's close. There's a comfortable glide. I love the shaving handle that you get, the razor handle. It's fantastic. And they have a neat story. For decades, there was one big razor company who has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. So our heroes, Jeff and Andy, said, hey, we're two ordinary guys, and we're sick of getting ripped off. So we're going to start our own company to fix shaving. So they started Harry's. And they knew there was only one way to ensure quality. So, yeah, They bought their own blade factory, and by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to the four or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And Harry's is so confident that you will love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. Just cover $3 shipping. And the free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle. I love this handle. It just feels great in your hand. 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover. Now, that, if you put that all together, that's a $13 value for you to try for free. So, stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. A $13 value for free. Just cover shipping. To get your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, and shave gel, go to harrys.com/campfire right now. I mean right now. That's harrys.com/campfire. You're gonna love it. Stop getting ripped off. Get a better shave. Have it delivered right to your home. harrys.com/campfire. Thanks, Harry's. Next up on the show is Argent. She's been listening for about 6 months. She's from Kansas, and it's an interesting story. She was listening to Stitcher to some spooky shows, and then she woke up, and I was playing. So who knows? Maybe there was something supernatural there. Maybe it was just like a shuffle thing on Stitcher. But either way, she found us. We're so glad. She has a couple of stories today that she would like to share with us, including one about a demon in her basement. Ew. Argent, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
So glad you found us, and tell us what happened.
Well, when I was little, now I've always been a sensitive. I am empathic. I've always been a sensitive, but my grandfather was a carpenter. He took a double wide home and just completely remodeled it, turned it into this beautiful house, took the front end out, built in a breakfast nook. I mean, made it gorgeous. There was a basement, which is where the demon lived. For a little while when I was a child, me, my parents, and my sister and I lived with my grandma and grandfather. And there was the living room. Right next to that, with a kind of an open space, there was the sunroom. And between the two was the stairway to the basement. And it was a small flight of stairs and then a landing. And then that landing kind of turned down into the basement for another small flight of stairs. For some reason, I was always terrified of the hallway, and we never found out anything about that, so I don't know. And I was always terrified of the basement, and I was a fearless child. My mom once caught me jumping off a roof onto a mattress. I was a fearless child. So I would often just, like, it was this feeling, like, it was almost like a panic attack, you know, that tight chest feeling. Every time I stood at the top of the stairs, well, one day I decided that I was done with this. I was done being scared. You know, I mean, I jump off a roof. I'm, you know, 6 years old. I can do anything, right? So I'm standing at the landing and I'm looking into the darkness of the basement. And I swear, like, I know it sounds crazy, but I swear to God, it was like it was looking back at me. Well, my mom's side of the family is very, very German, and very religious and very strict. And my grandmother jokes are something that kind of miss her. Like, she isn't a very joking person. So, and she doesn't like to, like, play around and, you know, mess with people and, you know, play jokes and stuff like that.
Right.
That is a concept that totally misses her. Well, we never figured out, you know, we eventually moved out, which will lead into my next story, but, we eventually moved out. And then, a couple of years ago, I'm talking like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, my grandma and I were sitting, talking about that house, 'cause they have since moved out and moved around a little bit since.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, grandma, you know, I was always terrified of the basement. I have no idea why, but that basement just scared the pants off of me. And she goes, as calm as she could, I mean, like she was reporting the news. She goes, well, that's because there was a demon down there.
Ooh.
I was like, Grandma, what? Grandma, no, Grandma. She's like, no, really. She said that she was in the sunroom, which was next to the stairs leading to the basement. And she said that she noticed this black mist start to form up and out of the basement. And she said that the best way she could describe the demon was it would look like a demonic ET.
Ugh.
It would look like ET, but if he was a demon. Like,
wow.
He was all black. He had red eyes. He had huge claws. And my grandma, again, like she was reporting the news, she told this demon how it was. She said, "I am God's child, and where I live, God lives also. You get out of this house now, and you are never to return." And she says that it screamed and hissed at her, and then shrank backwards back into the basement. It looked like it was, like, shrinking into the mist, like the mist was, like, enveloping it. That still creeps me out to this day. Like, I'm sitting in my car right now, and I have the shivers because, you know, this whole time, I'm terrified of this basement, and I find out there was a demon down there.
Oh, my goodness. That is, you know, that's really, that's terrifying, the idea that there was a demon. And the fact, to me, that your grandmother was such a religious person, you know, it's not someone who is into horror movies or,
right,
you know, watching a marathon of The Exorcist or anything like that. She's probably very, I'm guessing she was very against that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
And so for her to say that it's a demon, that kind of jumps in the credibility realm to me, that up a few rungs.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that she didn't joke around, like, she wasn't trying to, like, you know, play off my childhood fear, you know, and just, like, make a joke. Like, she was serious. And she said she saw a ghost and said the same thing, but I mean, this woman, you know, I don't want to, like, gross anybody out, but one time she was chopping a cucumber and accidentally cut off her finger. And with, like, again, like, she was reporting the weather, she was like, "Well, I guess it's time to go to the hospital," grabbed a bag of ice, and away she went.
Wow.
Like, I mean, nothing fazed this woman. She was ironclad.
Wow.
So after we moved out of there, we moved into a very old house, which wasn't haunted. It was built in the 1910s, beautiful house. But we bought from, back then we didn't have Craigslist. I want to say it was in the newspaper, but it was a 1920s player piano. And after we bought it, we noticed some strange things happening. And, you know, you get those weird feelings like you're being watched, but it was nothing really terrible. You know, like, lights would flicker on and off, or whenever we'd close the door to get into the bathtub, you know, the door would open. And then we'd get out and close it, and we'd get in the tub, the door would open. And we couldn't figure out. We knew we had, you know, a friendly spirit around, so we named him Kelly, because we didn't know if it was a boy or girl. And Kelly kind of seemed like a gender-neutral name, so we named him Kelly. And we'd be like, "Kelly, stop it," and it would stop. Well, one night, my dad was walking out of his bedroom, which ran parallel to where the piano sat in the dining room, because his bedroom was just him and him and my mother's bedroom stood off just from the dining room of our new house, and that's where the player piano was. He was walking up, and he gets up very early in the morning for work. So it's like 3:30 in the morning, and he says he feels something pacing him as he walks by the piano. He stops, and he looks, and he watches. And in the dining room, we had this huge, beautiful bay window. Why anybody needs a bay window in Kansas is beyond me. I don't know, but it was beautiful. And if you're a full-size adult, you kind of have to, like, squat down to look out of it. So literally, a bay window that, you know, you can't see out of when you're standing in front of it makes no sense, but, you know. That wasn't my planning. So, but he says he stops and he watches this man in a full 1920s gangster outfit, fedora, long jacket, you know, the shoes, the everything. This guy was straight out of a Dick Tracy movie.
Oh my!
1920s gangster. He walks out of the piano, just casually strolls, walks over to the bay window, hunches down like you would have to do if you wanted to look out of the bay window, looks out the bay window, turns around, looks to my dad, tips his fedora to my father, and walks back into the piano.
Oh, my.
And my dad was like, "I think that's when I started getting gray hairs." I mean, this was a full-bodied apparition. And so we would always switch rooms around a lot. I don't know why we did that in that house, but we were always moving rooms a lot in that house. And eventually, I got my parents' bedroom, which came with, as you know, for an 8-year-old child, this was heaven, a California king-size waterbed.
Oh, my.
You know, I was in total heaven, because I would just wedge myself between the bed and the board that, you know, the box was that held the bed. Oh, I would just it was wonderful. Well, one night I was laying there getting ready to go to sleep, you know, all snuggled up. And suddenly I feel the waterbed move as somebody was crawling into bed with me. I looked kind of over my shoulder and I didn't see like it was my sister or anything. So I did the, you know, the kid thing where I put my blanket over my head and just went to sleep. And when I woke up, there was an indentation of a person laying there, like somebody who has, was laying there. And I was like, all right, listen, buddy, here's the deal. We can be friends, but I don't want any scary stuff at night. I don't want you to, you know, jump out and scare me. I don't want any scary stuff. If you cannot scare me, you know, don't wake me up in the middle of the night. Don't sit on my chest. Don't do any of that crazy, scary stuff. We can be friends. And I didn't get much of a response, you know, at that time. And then every night after that, he would sleep next to me or lay next to me. And it got to a point to where I would like roll over and I'd slap where the indentation was and I'd be like, wake up, Kelly. And then, you know, the indentation would just dissipate as if it, you know, he had gotten up. And as a child, I spent most of my time with him, you know, and we were always hanging out. Like I would, you know, set my coloring book on the floor and I'd have all my crayons out and I'd be coloring something and I'd be like, Kelly, I don't know what color this car should be. And without a doubt, you know, a crayon would roll towards me of just some color. And, you know, he always loved to play tricks or get me in trouble with my mom, but he was always a very good childhood companion. I didn't have an imaginary friend. I had a ghost for a best friend when I was a kid.
Now, let me ask you this. Was it a case where, did your family think that this was an imaginary friend or did they know about it?
Oh, they knew. They knew. Kelly was he made his presence very, very known. Everybody knew about him. If something went weird, we were like, Kelly, knock it off, you know? And there'd be times where, there was once where, we had switched rooms yet again and we kind of had this, it was kind of a shotgun house where you could see like the back door, which would really been the bathroom door, but the back of the house from the front of the house. And, where my room was at this time from the bathroom, if you were sitting on the toilet, you could look into the microwave, which was in the kitchen, and look into the rest of the house, kind of use it as a mirror. And my mom said she saw somebody moving around and she thought it was me. So my bedroom at that time was just off the kitchen and she goes, get back in bed. And I was like, Mom, I'm not up. And she goes, do you promise? And I was like, I promise. I'm in bed. I swear. And she was like, okay. She goes, Kelly, quit trying to get in trouble. And then she saw it like walk off.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, he was definitely a trickster. He liked to play jokes. He liked to try and get me into trouble. Like I said, he would always open doors. That was his favorite game, was the doors during the shower. And then it got a little sad. This does have kind of a sad ending with Kelly. As I got older, he seemed to grow more violent.
Oh my.
Things would be thrown. And things would get rather violent. And one time he pushed an entire stack of plates that was sitting on top of the microwave on top of my friend who was playing her guitar underneath the microwave while I was making us some sort of late night snack. And it was just small growing stuff like that. Like as I got older into high school and stuff like that. And one day, the stove, which was right next to the bathroom door was closed and I was standing, leaning up against it, talking to my mom, and there was a knife on the counter and the knife came off the counter and hit less than an inch away from my, left ear.
Oh my goodness. Now that gets scary.
And it was very scary. It was very scary because I'm, you know, sitting there going, oh my God, what just happened? And the knife was deep in there. It was thrown with force. And my mother was cooking at the stove, you know, because we were talking, and she just kind of looks up at the knife, and she kind of looks behind her, and she goes, she says nothing to Kelly. She says, there's no reaction. She just goes, I think you're going to go on vacation for a couple of weeks with your grandparents. And I was like, okay, that's a really weird thing to say after I've had a knife thrown at my head, but okay. And they had to exorcise the house of Kelly from that. And, you know, when I found out, I started crying. I was like, why was he like this? You know, he was my best friend. You know, he, you know, slept next to me every night. He watched over me. You know, he helped me color. He helped me, you know, even the dog liked him, you know, and which is weird because, you know, dogs are sometimes weird about spirits, you know, so I don't understand why he did this. And my mom thinks that maybe since I was moving on, getting older and moving forward, that maybe he went crazy because he was not moving forward with me. Like, you know, it was kind of like he's stuck where he's at, but I'm getting older, progressing, you know, getting friends and stuff like that.
Well, so, it's quite a story, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I hope, you know, I don't know what happens to spirits after their exercise, but, you know, he really did, you know, give me an interesting childhood. And he was very loving. He was very kind, you know. There would be times where, you know, if I was sick, you know, and the covers were down around my waist and I was half asleep, you know, I would feel the covers come up to my shoulders.
Wow.
You know, he was a really, really, really kind spirit. And it wasn't my mom, because I'd wake up and I'd just see the covers move and I'd be like, oh, thank you, Kelly.
Wow.
You know? And wow. So he was so loving and he was so kind. And then, as I got older, he just grew more and more violent. And my mom thinks it was just because he was stuck.
Oh my. Well, thank you so much for sharing these very unique stories, two of them, and being a part of the campfire tonight.
Oh, I love it. I love your show. I love listening. It helps me get me through my work day.
Excellent. That's the goal. If we can help somebody do that, then we're doing our job. Well, I hope that you enjoyed this edition of The Campfire as much as I did, and I hope that you'll check out our virtual campfire. It's a free group over on Facebook. We have almost 11,000 members. Great participation, great stories. I think you'll like it. Check it out. And also, please rate, review, and subscribe to the shows wherever you may listen. All three of those things are really important if you have the option in your particular favorite listening app. That's really important, because when we talk about the campfire, you basically have my little tiny company. I'm not a big conglomerate. There's me. I work full time on this, and I have a great associate producer, Maddie. Many of you know her, and she does a fantastic job. She works part time, and then we have some editors that help us out on some of the shows, although I edit quite a few of the shows these days as well. So really, we're talking about a very small operation here, but we're big because of you. And the only way to spread that word, because we don't have those big marketing budgets, just go over, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you may listen. We will talk to you next time. I thank you so much. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.